Okay, all right. Yes, it has been quite some time. Because this episode is obviously from week 4 to week 9. That is like a long time. Why have you been gone for that many weeks? Well, let's just say February was not a joke. February was not even playing. February was not long, surprisingly. It wasn't long. January wasn't even long either, so January wasn't long, February wasn't long. March, however, that we're now in, is actually starting to seem like the month that is long. It's like the length of the months changes as the years come and go. I think when you highly anticipate January being really, really long, it doesn't end up being long. And then you anticipate February being the latent long month, and then it doesn't do that either. And apparently, I think it's going to be flipping March. But anyway, we're here now. So I've been gone for a while. Several things. Work, grandmother's burial, NYSC, being sick for 3 weeks, and just being generally stressed and overwhelmed. So yeah. But that's pretty much been why I've not done anything since then, because this is meant to be weekly. I am still trying my best to make sure this is weekly. As you can see, man, I am a man. I struggle. This is a journal, man. Sometimes journals go a while without being filled because, like, where is the time to fill the flipping journal? So yeah. So without further ado, let's get into this episode. Right here, you know the drill. At this point, you're hearing that calm music. That means this is the first segment of the podcast called Thoughts, Mirrors, and More. The section of the podcast where I talk about the things God has bestowed upon me, the things I've learned from the Bible readings, as well as the book or books I use in conjunction with the Bible. And something recently has changed in the sense that I have started to see the Bible. I have started to see the Bible as a means by which I secure my mental health. Now, I know it might sound strange, it might sound like some preacher's hoo-ha, but I feel that way. I genuinely feel that way, that it's kind of helping me with mental stability. So there's something about reading the Bible for me in the morning, having my own private time with God, that kind of brings me peace throughout the whole day. And when I don't do it, it feels a bit, you know, strange and whatever. So it kind of just safeguards my mental health in a sense. And this is not like me trying to make some case for people who are struggling with their mental health that, oh yeah, read the Bible. This is just me. This is just personal. If you read it and you meditate on the things there and you find it to be also very helpful, then good for you. So what I do anyway is, which I didn't do in the first episode, is that I actually read from Psalms, Proverbs, and then from the Gospel, the New Testament. So I read one chapter in Psalms, one chapter in Proverbs, and one chapter of Matthew. And of course, I make my way down from Matthew to Mark, Luke, and then John. Anyway, so I make small notes in a book when I read the Bible. So in Psalms chapter 1, it's very short notes, pretty much learned about how the righteous should behave, how they should behave, how they should flee from sin, how we should all flee from sin, actually, and meditate day and night, especially on the word. Like I said, it helps me for mental stability, because when I'm thinking about a scripture that has stuck out to me in the Bible, and I'm thinking about that throughout the day, I'm constantly thinking about how to implement that in my life. And so the things I would usually overthink about, that I'd be paranoid about or stress about before going to work, I don't think about those things. I only think about the scripture, and I kind of keep meditating on that. And as I meditate on that, with time, as I go through the Bible, I tend to see opportunities for which I can implement what I've learned in the Bible in my life. So meditating on the Bible would help very much when it comes to going forward with the day and not feeling anxious about anything, because all that's in your mind is the Word of God and God Himself, and well, you're not thinking about anything else, and as things come, you handle them. And of course, the other thing I noted from Psalm chapter 1 is that the righteous are like trees planted near water, bearing fruit and not withering. Now on to Proverbs chapter 1. So there were a lot of notes in this one. So the first note is that to be wise, one must listen to increase learning and attain wise counsel. And it's very different from hearing. People should know this by now. Listening is really paying attention to what the person is saying, why they are saying it, why they've chosen the words they chose to use. You need to really listen, right? So that you can increase in learning and know more things rather than you just, you know, as my mom used to put it, and my dad used to put it, we talk to you and it goes through one ear and comes out the other ear, right? So don't let it pass through your ears. Let it go through in one ear and have like a clog in the other ear so that it doesn't escape your brain, basically. So you need to really listen, paying attention, and being quiet is part of listening. So you really need to pay attention, be quiet, be still, in a sense. Of course, another point is that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That is a very interesting one. The fear of the Lord is it's not normal fear, it's fear with respect. And when you fear the Lord, then I think you open your heart and your mind up to the fact that you don't know much and you aren't very much without Him. So then you are more willing to accept and learn the things you do not know. And of course, law of the father, instruction of the mother. So if your father has a law, you know, a certain law in his house that you should not break. Of course, within reason, right? A law within reason. Adhere to it, follow it. There are reasons why he set these laws. I think besides rebelling against the law, you probably want to have conversations with your father or your mother as to why they set certain laws, ask them about their experiences. So that way it's even easier if you decide that you don't want to stick to the law the exact way they've laid it out. If there's something you want to tweak or something or a fear in them that you want to appease so as to allow you to have more wriggle room, then do that. I think you should take time to actually understand why they see. I mean, sometimes we think we are so sure of why they set a certain rule, and most often than not, yeah, we do have a good idea why they set the rule, but what has happened in their lives that has made them more worried about these things? Ask them these questions. You know, they may become a little bit softer and more receptive to your idea of not completely sticking to the rule. So, do not consent to the enticement of sinners. Yeah, don't do that. That's mad temptation. It's a very, very nice looking temptation, but don't do it. We harm ourselves when we sin, even if the wrongdoing gives pleasure or unjust reward. Yeah, it does harm the soul when you sin. It harms the soul and your conscience. It becomes a bit harder, although you may not think so in the moment, but later on it becomes a bit harder to discern what is good and what is wrong. Because then you've bent your conscience so much that you can't really tell anymore. And of course, seek and pray for wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Fear the Lord. So yeah, these are very important things. You need to seek and pray for wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. Because you don't know everything, right? So you got to ask God, please. You know, I don't know much. You know, so like, Lord, like, please tell me what's up. So yeah, just pray to God, ask Him for wisdom. Because sometimes, in my case, for example, my father is not around anymore. So a lot of the time, I don't know what to do about certain things where my father would have just told me what to do. I don't have that anymore. Not to say that if you have a father, you shouldn't ask Jesus what to do, because you know your father has only had so many experiences. He hasn't had them all. But Jesus knows it all. So if you need to know what to do about a certain situation, first of all, I mean, the Bible is a great place to go. Sometimes it's a big place to go and you're not sure where to go through the Bible. But if you start now, I think with time, you'll be able to figure your way around. And of course, even if you don't know how to maneuver your way around the Bible, just pray to God and be still and just wait for something. You're going to get it. When I say wait for it, I don't mean necessarily like wait hours in one position. You can go about doing other things, but just have your mind ready to receive whatever it is He's going to tell you. Right, so you're not going to understand everything. So yeah, you got to pray to God to understand what it is you're even reading in the Bible. Sometimes the Bible can be a little bit confusing. You're like, wait, what does this mean? So you got to ask God for wisdom. Ask your parents if, you know, they know what's going on in a certain scripture. I ask my mom every now and then. Ask a pastor, ask a friend in a community that you know is a Christian or that reads the Bible a lot, Or just Google it, dude. There's like so many resources out there you can use. And of course then to Matthew chapter 1. What I learned from that is that God can do anything through anyone. When you go through the lineage of Jesus Christ, that's what the first chapter is about. It's just pretty much the Genesis till when you get to Jesus, right? So who his ancestors are. If you read through all that, you will notice that God can do anything through anyone. You know, there isn't anyone that is too far gone for God. So that was a very important thing to know. Now Joseph, another thing I did note, was a just man not wanting to make Mary a public example. Now when I saw that part of the scripture, I wasn't entirely sure if this meant if I should try and handle things quietly with people rather than publicly embarrass them. Because you know, you sometimes hate those type of situations where you're trying to address a certain situation with someone, but they've decided to make it a loud one, and now it's out in the open, and it's kind of embarrassing because they made you kind of look like you're unreasonable for trying to settle the beef between you guys quietly. And I think it's better than having someone publicly humiliated, right? So I think and not to say that, I mean, because that wasn't the case with Mary. Mary and Joseph did not have like an issue that they had to sort out. I mean, yeah, she was pregnant with Jesus, but it wasn't like they were quarreling about something. But obviously in his wisdom, he had to keep her hidden so that people wouldn't think, huh, this is something's wrong here. Joseph, how long have you known this woman? Yeah, so wisdom and discretion. He used both of those. Right, so for the book I use in conjunction with the Bible, which is The Way, titled The Way by Saint Jose Maria Escriva, I read the first 5 points in the first episode, so I'm going to read the next 5. Point number 6. Turn your back on the tempter when he whispers in your ear. Why make life difficult for yourself? Point number 7. Get rid of that small town outlook. Enlarge your heart till it becomes universal. Don't flutter about like a hen when you can soar to the heights of an eagle. Point number 8. Serenity. Why lose your temper if by doing so you offend God, annoy other people, upset yourself, and have to find it again in the end? Point number 9. Say what you've just said, but in a different tone, without anger, and your argument will gain in strength, and above all, you won't offend God. Point number 10. Never correct anyone while you are still indignant about a fault committed. Wait until the next day, or even longer, and then, calmly and with a purer intention, make your reprimand. You will gain more by one friendly word than by a 3-hour quarrel. Control your temper. That is all for Thoughts, Mirrors, and More. So, on to the next segment. So, before we go into the next segment, do take time to meditate on the things I have said. I'm not the Bible, I'm not Jesus, man, but, you know, go meditate on your Bible as well. If this is a call for you to do that, if you've been thinking about doing it and haven't yet done it, go do it, okay? But yeah, the next segment is coming up, and that is the journal. Oh, come on. You would think that trying to be a professional podcaster, I would by now have remembered to actually put my phone on silent.
Hello.
Hi, who's it's this?
Chola from HR Quality.
Oh, okay, hi.
Good morning, yeah. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Morning to you too.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
I'm actually calling to find out how far.
About what?
How far was your registration for NYS?
Oh, shit, wrong number. Someone's got the wrong number. That is weird. That is strange. She sounded just like Chola from HR. Wow, people sound very, very familiar. Jeez, I wonder what that was about. Oh, well, we'll never know. We're never gonna know. Because it was the wrong number, of course. yeah. Wrong number. Oh, a message. What is this? Why did this random person, I don't know, send me a voice note? That's weird. I wonder what it says.
Hello, young man.
Yo, who the flip is this guy?
We have been informed by the human resource department of your place of work that you have been evading your call to duty. Been drafted by the National Youth Service Corps to save your country. Failure to report to see you arrested. See you at camp. Good day to you, young man.
No flipping way. Shola did not just... Oh my flip. When you're summoned by a higher power and you're drafted by your country for service, when they say, "We want you," for some there's a sense of pride and joy to serve the motherland, for others a sense of dread that they will be going into the unknown, possibly never to see the faces of their loved ones again. At least for 3 weeks. Well, I was called upon by my country, an honor! Not just for anyone, but an honor literally for everyone. It's NYSC, man, it's the National Youth Service Corps. If you've graduated from a tertiary institution and are a Nigerian, you're probably most likely gonna have to go through it. And it's in my opinion, the Nigerian equivalent of the fictional DC Universe Green Lantern Corps. Only that instead of a cool glowing ring, you have a mandatory shabby looking cap, which you should always have because it's part of your uniform. So even if you can't wear it on your head, you've got to have it in your hand. Now, like the Green Lantern Corps, we've got an anthem. The Green Lantern Corps both goes, "In brightest day, in darkest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light." Now that bangs. Apart, the National Youth Service Corps anthem is not as cool. It's got three stanzas. I don't even know why it's got three stanzas, but I'm going to read the first one. "Youth, obey the clarion call. Let us lift our nation high. Under the sun or in the rain, with dedication and selflessness, Nigeria's ours. Nigeria's we serve." No, come on. No, it doesn't even rhyme, lads. What's going? We got to do better. Please, next president needs to address that. It's got to rhyme, at least. Now, this explanation I'm about to give is more for the people who do not know what NYSC is. Either they're not born yet or they're just not aware. So the people who have gone through it or are currently going through it, you may not need this explanation. But I've got to explain to the lads coming behind us so they know what to prepare for. So NYSC, it's not some special draft into the army or something. Maybe they picked you because you've been displaying excellent skill as you were growing up. And they want to train you to be the next national assassin or something. This isn't flipping Russia. That's not happening. You're doing NYSC because you've got no choice for the most part. If you're Nigerian, at least. No plans to leave the country? You've got to do NYSC. Plans to come back? You've got to do NYSC. Political ambition? You've sure as shit got to do NYSC. And, you know, some of you unfortunately fall into the category of people that don't want to stay here or don't plan on coming back, but somehow your family and friends have convinced you that you have to do it, right? Don't feel too bad. I mean, after all, you never know what's going to happen. You never know when you might just be deported, God forbid, but you never know. And you never know when you just might become an international war criminal seeking asylum in your homeland. Either way, it's possible you'd find yourself having to work here. If not for an extended period of time, and just in the interim, trying to work in any Nigerian firm that is trying to uphold and adhere to the traditions of the government, you're gonna have to do NYSC. Of course, there's some special cases. At some certain age, when you decide, when you've left university or some tertiary institution, you can't do it. You just get, You get an exemption? Yeah, but unless you're planning to wait till that age before you go to uni, then I don't think you want to do that. And I think that age is like, 39 or 40? Yeah, it's not worth it, mate. Anyway, I'm going off topic here. As I was saying, I was called upon by my country, and I answered the call of the eagle. That's our national animal, for those who don't know. So I majestically took myself to camp. Okay, you know what, let me out myself here. I did not majestically take myself to camp. I was actually not feeling well. I was feeling pretty shit. So my mum drove me to camp because I could not do that myself. I just couldn't do it. It was not possible. So she got me there. And to give you the rundown on how that day went, woke up around 5 a.m, you know, had my bath, brushed my teeth. I think got out of the house by around 6-ish. Got there by 7:05, and by the time we got there, people swarmed the car, trying to sell stuff to you, because when you get to camp, the idea is that you spend 3 weeks on the campgrounds, going through well, whatever you go through at camp, because I don't personally see the point, but you know, you spend 3 weeks. And of course, you're going to need some things when you get to camp that you're going to spend 3 weeks at. You need things to take care of yourself with, some essentials, you know. So people show up to your car trying to sell these things to you. And the only other type of people who are also there are the people that are selling things to you for the sake of your registration, which you also do at camp. So when you get there, you might get sold maybe buckets, envelopes, ID card holders, flipping markers, and of course, the most important one is passport photos. The service of passport photos. So of course, when you're preparing to go for camp, people would have already told you what you needed, right? So you're well aware way before going to camp or registering for anything, you need at least like 20 passport photos, because they might just ask you for every single one of them when you get to camp. Although in my case, I didn't use up to 5, so I was a bit annoyed because I spent a lot of money to get 24. But it's better to be safe than sorry, because when you get there, that guy who's trying to make you patronize him to take passport photos of you, he's gonna use all the tricks in the book to try and guilt you into patronizing his services. So the thing is, when you get to camp and you get through the camp gates, you can't necessarily come back out without, you know, having a particular reason, a very important reason, or, you know, you get an exeat from camp that you don't want to stay, which is one of the things I got later on during the day. So the thing is, those people that are taking passport photos are not allowed onto campgrounds, right? So you have to do it outside before you get in. So they're going to do everything in their power to convince you before you walk through those gates that, hey, mate, you need me. But the thing is, they tell you that you need to have your passport photo with a red background. Now, because they know a bunch of people would have been properly prepared before they came to camp with already taken passport photos, they've got to say, you know, make it different, special, so they can get money out of you. And the thing is, if it was meant to be a red background, you know, passport photo, out of the 8 or more people you spoke to about getting prepared for camp, someone would have mentioned it. But nobody did. And let's think about it. Let's really think about it. Red is not even a color on our flipping flag. How is that patriotic, right? That red color signals only one thing. I mean, after all, lads, we're in Nigeria. We're in Africa. Black magic is such a thing. And if you watch Nollywood movies where they go to visit a Babalawo in the forest, well, you know that the color red is a juju thing. So why is it red? Why is it red that you want to think? That's very suspicious, sir. I'm not stupid. You will never catch me. But if, unfortunately, you happen to succumb to this man's tactics, I would very much recommend you go for a vigil and start praying night and day. So it wasn't up until 2 hours later, around 9 a.m, that they finally started to address us and some semblance of a line was forming for the registration process. Now, the manner in which they went about doing it was slightly vexing, but I understood. They attended to people who came from much further distances first than those who resided within the state that they were posted to. So, the only other exemptions that were made were people that studied courses that awarded them licenses. So people who studied law, people who studied to become doctors. I believe at the end of both professions, you're awarded licenses. I don't really know, but I'm assuming. So they let those people go in first and, you know, get this stuff sorted and come out quicker. And also at some point, they started calling out to specific schools. Now, these schools were within Lagos, right? Or between Lagos and Ogun State. So they called out to schools like Babcock, to Covenant, I think, as well. So, yeah, when it got to the point where I thought they were going to mention my university, they did not. So if you guys went to PAU, they're not going to do that. I don't know maybe what year they might start doing it, but they're not going to call out to your university. You're going to just have to wait like everybody else. Now, when I finally got into the hall where we were meant to do our registration, I was sitting at the back, you know, waiting to get attended to. And then my eyes spotted a certain woman oozing softness, mate. Her nails done, hair done, everything did. With smooth skin too, and her hair waving in the wind of her handheld electronic fan. Man, when I saw her, I was so tempted. I thought to myself, yo, who is this? You know, I just wanted to get to the front of the line so I could ask her you know, ask her for her fan, because oh my days, it was flipping hot. Jeez, man, there was no fan in sight and it was actually a blazing day. I felt like an absolute ding dong for not wearing shorts. I do not know why I didn't do that. But oh my God, I really wanted that fan. I was thirsty as well. Oh my days, it was just a horrible combination. Now, after the registration madness, I had to fill a bank form, because for those who don't know, the government pays you the minimum wage every single month throughout your year of service. So I had to fill the bank form, which takes me to the side quest or mini tale of the three trophies and the one Heineken.
The quest for the three trophies and the one Heineken.
Now, this story of the four beers pretty much starts at the point at which I needed to charge my phone, because, well, there was a lot of information on there I needed to use to fill the bank form. So I was on my way looking for a place to charge my phone, and then a man under a tent with a camera flagged me down, asking me to patronize his services, which I think he was someone in camp who was actually allowed to take passport photos. I told him I didn't need any. And he grabbed a chair and told me, oh, come on, okay then, tell me what you need, what do you want? And so I told him I needed to charge my phone. Then he directed me to another tent where you can charge your phone. But before I left, he said, you know, maybe we could both sit down together and have a chat over a beer or a trophy. He actually said trophy, because that's obviously his beer of choice. I said, well, I'm not thinking about that right now. I just need to go charge my phone. I told him thank you, and I'm going to charge my phone. After doing everything I needed to do, I went back to get my phone, and then when spotting him under his tent again, I went to him, you know, since it was a pretty hot day and he had helped me, I said, you know what, let's go get that trophy. I did not plan on drinking, so we were walking down, I was just going to buy him the trophy and go. We walked down to another tent where, you know, they were selling food and drinks. And I could sense behind me the presence of two other men. So I tried to pretend like they weren't there, and then when we got to the person selling the stuff, I asked her for a trophy. Well, at least the man asked for the trophy and said I was paying for it, which was the case. So he asked for it and they gave it to him, and immediately it touched his second hand. The second hand passed it to one of his friends, and then I thought to myself, oh shit, he's trapped me. He got me there. I tried to ignore it. I should have addressed that shit, but I didn't. Now, I asked for the price, and it was something reasonable, so I didn't even mind buying his other friend another trophy. So it ended up being three trophies, two for his friends and one for him. Now, I wanted to leave and just pay and go, but he said, no, come on, sit down, have a drink with us.
And
I thought, no, I don't want to do that. I really don't want to do that. But it seems to be a common practice among men that when you buy a beer or whatever form of alcoholic beverage for a person, they just want you to drink with them. It's just a thing. I don't know why. But I succumbed to the peer pressure. And then I had a bottle of Heineken. Now, I say bottle because when you go to places like that, there is absolutely no way they're going to have it in a can. So she whipped out the proper big bottle of Heineken. And I thought, oh my flipping days, I'm not going to be able to finish this. And the guy was like, oh, come on, you know, you can. And then, you know, peer pressure part two, I sat down and I finished it. I thought I wouldn't be able to finish it, but turns out my stomach was quite empty because I had not eaten or really had much water. So, yeah, you know, drinking on an empty stomach, that's a very stupid thing to do. I know, but, well, it didn't really do much to me. It was just 5%. Heineken isn't particularly strong. I'm a lightweight, but I'm not that much of a lightweight. But anyway, that was the story, or the tale, of the three trophies and the one Heineken. At the end of the day, I only spent 13 hours at camp just registering and trying to get an exeat form. 13 flipping hours. Can you believe that shit? Why is it that, do you know what 13 hours is? That's like half the day, guys. I woke up at 5 a.m. and I was there from 7. What, 13 hours, man? Are you flipping joking? What the hell is all that about? Why are you wasting
one long angry line later?
After all that, I went back to work the next day. I know, brutal, right? I went back to work somehow feeling slightly better because of the medications I was taking. Then towards the end of the work week, I fell ill again. As such, I couldn't be present at the office for the last day of filming, which was actually a very big occasion because that was the day we were wrapping up the first season of a show that we'd been filming. So yeah, that kind of sucked. But anyway, the week after, I just stayed in bed, unable to do anything. I couldn't even eat properly. And that was the same week for the final preparations for my grandmother's burial. It was a brutal week leading up to the final burial week. A week that saw my mother go to the mainland almost every day with this fuel crisis that we had, as well as the cash problem. And as well as the same week that saw the tailor we had given money and material to vanish when it was time to produce results. And I kid you not, to this day, that Don has disappeared. We don't even know, we haven't heard anything from this guy. Apparently, this is not his first rodeo. He's done this before. So to you, sir, if you're listening, which I'm very sure you're not, shame on you. Anyway, because I was still ill the week of the burial, I missed the service of songs. I felt a bit better to go the next day for the funeral service, however. And I was having slight shivers when the dirt hit the coffin of my grandmother's casket. After she joined her mother, my great-grandmother, in the vault, it was on to the reception. The hall, I saw all the adults, parents, grandparents, uncles and aunties, two of my favourite cousins from my mother's side. But alas, no cousin in sight. It was just my brother and I. It was drab for a while until it was time to dance. Now, if you know me, I'm not the biggest fan of dancing, not gonna lie to you. And honestly, I wasn't looking forward to the reception at all. And that was when I realized something. I made a great discovery. I don't think I'm very Nigerian. I don't think so. I didn't want to eat the jollof rice, and that is saying something. I just didn't care to eat it. I didn't want to dance, which is another thing that is very... That's a thing that Nigerians actually want to do at functions. I just wanted to go home. At the time, I could no longer understand my friends that like to attend all these functions, especially weddings. Like, I just did not... I couldn't imagine myself wanting to attend a wedding. I mean, I know a burial and a wedding are vastly different things, but I just couldn't see myself actually wanting to enjoy that. Well, that was at least until the final dancers commenced and they were spraying money. Then, in that moment, my understanding of Nigerian functions returned. Now, about the dance and the money spraying thing, I was sure without, I don't know, my mind went to this place because it was very strange. I was sure without a shadow of a doubt that because of the lack of new currency in the country at the time, that this funeral dance would be one of the few that had no money sprayed in it. I thought that we were going to have this reception and there was going to be no money spraying because, you know, you can't really find cash in the country and all that. I somehow imagined that because of this, when people came out to dance, that they would whip out their phones and, you know, start transferring money. And you know the same way they slap you with the money when you're dancing? I thought they would slap you with their screens and say, I've transferred. Do you know what I'm saying? I thought that was going to be... I'm not even lying. I'm being very serious. I really thought genuinely that was what was going to happen.
Transferred.
Thank you, ma'am.
I've transferred it.
yes, thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
I have transferred.
Yes. Yay. Thank you, sir.
Oh, I just remembered.
Remember,
your brother and your sister. I've transferred. Double. Yay.
Hey, Oya, come on. Come on.
Yes.
I'm also transferred.
Oh, no. Uncle
GD, you're dancing well. Why are you laughing?
I just transferred 1 million naira.
Ah, no. God, please help me now.
Watch out. Oh, my God. RKO.
I realize now I was really stupid. Now, about the observations that I made and the feelings that I had concerning burial processes in general, concerning the burial reception, it was quite visibly telling on the faces of my grandmother's siblings that they were visibly distraught and sad about the occasion. And who wouldn't be? Burying a sibling is a hard thing, and it was compounded by the fact that just before my grandmother, in the same year, they had already buried 3 siblings and pretty much a brother who was an in-law, more because he married one of their siblings. So they buried 4 people in the span of a year, and they were practically all siblings, and it was quite tough. It's quite tough, right? Because there were 8 of them, but now 3 are dead, and so now it's 5, minusing the uncle in-law, right? And it's quite sad, it's quite tough, right? Back-to-back-to-back burials, and it's just not easy. And, you know, it was hard to see. This is where I couldn't marry the idea of the celebration of life and grieving. I couldn't marry the ideas together because I could see their faces and I could, you know, tell that they were distressed about the situation. But yet, when it came time to dance, they had to put on a brave face and go out there and move their bodies against their will. So they just didn't feel like dancing. Honestly, who would, right? Who would feel like dancing on such an occasion? It's quite a sad thing. But they had to force themselves because that's just what tradition is like. Tradition here is when you're celebrating life, every family member comes out to dance, you know, as a celebration of life type of thing. As a, in quote, celebration of life ritual, if you would say. And it's quite sad because you can see that they're not, they probably don't even want to dance, but they just have to do it because they feel that if they don't, then they have failed tradition and they have failed the person that they've just buried. I don't know how their mind works really, but they're coming from that era, right? And so I've just never really understood it, to be honest. I didn't want to dance at first. And the money isn't even what made me come out to dance, because at the time when I came out, I didn't, like I said, there was no money in sight. I did not know they were going to do that. And so I just did it because my brother and my mum were already in the dance circle, and I was like, okay, might as well. And, you know, people were chastising me to come and dance anyway. And, you know, I didn't feel like dancing. I needed her siblings, or really anyone else there that was really close to my grandma, but they just forced themselves to. And it's just, you know, sometimes I think that they just don't have to do these things, right? Where they have to push themselves to try and be brave about it, even though they're very sad about the situation. It's tough to watch it. It's really tough to watch their faces when they're going through it. They're forcing themselves to dance, forcing themselves to have a smile on their faces as they're spraying money. They're not happy about the case, about the situation. So I don't think it's something I'm ever going to really understand, having to dance for the celebration of life. As much as it's a traditional thing, I just don't think I'm ever going to get it. Now, of course, February is also notorious for a very special day. Everyone knows February the 14th. You know, it's so special. I can't forget to mention it, right?
Art that I put in, because I'm trying to lay it down.
Oh, okay then, welcome.
It was the day that Champions League came back, lads. It's been phenomenal, hasn't it? I mean, we've watched some excellent matches, yeah? Fantastic stuff. That's all that day is good for. Although it feels like I'm forgetting something. Okay, yeah, okay, guys, I was just playing, come on, obviously. Okay, I know I'm just playing, come on. February the 14th is also a day that I passed out NYC camp. Yeah, I was pretty happy that I did that. Pretty satisfied. It was a very annoying day, but it was a day that I pretty much did that. I did that, and it was good. Yep, that's it. Got there by 7:15 a.m. or thereabout. Was there till 4 p.m. It was a long, hot, and tiring day. Shout out to Ebon Olua, who helped me out with my NYC belt in front of everyone. That was a risky situation. Saw some old faces, met some new ones. Yeah, that was pretty much all that day was good for. Champions League and passing out of NYSC camp. Yep, there's not. Yeah, that's kind of it. I don't think I'm forgetting anything else. Yeah, that's kind of it.
Oh, come on, my shoe. Just my luck.
This is a segment you now know, Gum Under My Shoe. As much as I didn't want this to happen, I was also kind of looking forward to this happening, so I'd be able to casually bring up this topic. Road officials.
Here is your particulars and your driver's license. Okay, come on for the road, come on for the road. Mercy. What you they show me?
That's the driver's license, Federal Road Safety Commission.
Uh-huh. Where your driver's license?
In the original, I never come.
Huh? This is the part of the podcast where we learn ways to be better Nigerians so that we stop throwing gum on the floor and having other people step on it, as well as learning ways to get out of sticky situations, like having gum under your shoe. This is Gum Under Your Shoe, ladies and gentlemen, and now we're going to be talking about road officials. How many times have you been stopped by road officials on the road? I, in my short period of driving professionally and legally, have been stopped quite a number of times, actually. There was the day I took one way. That was the first time I was ever stopped, and I didn't know it was a one-way road. There was the day I was fined by FRSC, the Federal Road Safety Commission. The day I was on the way to Landmark with Maruche at the back, I was taking the back route to Landmark Beach at night. You don't want to ever do that because there's some wackos, whack road officials, police or whatever you want to call them, that are very aggressive. And make sure you always have your car doors locked because those guys are mad. Anyway, of course, there was also the day I was on the way to my office on Freedom Way. The day they stopped me on the way to my job, I was, this was also actually in February, which is why I brought this up. This came up in February, they stopped me on the way to work again, but this was not the office. I was going with a few people from the office to certain locations. We had to do certain filming for people who had paid for it, so yeah. And of course, there was the time they stopped me in Lekki Phase 1 when I had a friend in the car at night for a car check. They wanted to check I didn't have illegal substances in my car or illegal things, period. Yes, so that was pretty much it. Road officials, flipping annoying. You know, I respect some of them, but not all of them, because I've had some very annoying situations. So I realized I definitely need to, of course, give you a few things, points of advice for people who are just new to driving, or people who somehow, in all their time of driving, have never been stopped by road officials. Which is weird, because I feel like everyone should be stopped by a road official by now, if you've been driving for a long time. Everyone has one story, or two at least. But anyway, sometimes they use scare tactics or fear to intimidate you into thinking that you do not have what it is they require. So sometimes they might lie to you blatantly to your face that you don't have what they're asking for, because they can see in your eyes and on your face that you're confused and scared. So don't let them get an advantage over you. Familiarize yourself with these things I'm about to list down. So first of all, you need your vehicle license. It's a sticker on your car. So if they ask you for that, it's not a certificate, it's not a piece of paper, it's a sticker that's on your car. So ask people around you that know what the sticker looks like and let them point that out to you. If it expires, get a new one. Insurance, you need that. You need third-party insurance at least. If you can't get the premium, because premium is expensive, get at least third-party insurance. Roadworthiness. Roadworthiness is a certificate. You get your car checked out, and they say, okay, your car is roadworthy, then they give you a certificate. So always have that with you. Of course, you need to have, definitely, your driver's license. If you don't have it, you deserve to get stopped on the road. You need photocopies, laminated photocopies of your actual driver's license, because if any road official should stop you, it is very dangerous to actually give them your official driver's license, because if they decide to withhold it from you and not give it to you, you can't drive anywhere. Because you just get stopped by one of their cronies at the other corner and say, hey, you don't got your driver's license. So yeah, you want to give them an actual photocopy, not your actual one. And if your case is the case that you have a car that has been handed to you by an external party that's not from your family, or anyone that's not from your immediate family anyway. So if it's an uncle that's given you a car, make sure he has given you the papers of transfer of ownership, because sometimes they might see a young person driving an old model of a car that's maybe rather expensive, at least at the time that it was bought, and they might think you stole it if you do not have the papers that show transfer of ownership from your uncle to yourself or from some random guy to yourself. You need to have that. And of course, for the Federal Road Safety Commission officers, if they see you have all your other affairs in order, they're going to ask you for the tinier things like the fire extinguisher and the hazard sign, as well as your car jack for replacing your tire. If you don't have that, they can have cause to fine you. So you don't want to give them any room for doing any of that stuff. So yeah, you need to make sure you have those things and familiarize yourself with these things so that they do not double cross you. All right, lads, that is all on this list. Okay, lads, so that will be pretty much it for today, or this week, technically. I will be probably putting out another episode on Monday, because that is the day I'm meant to be putting another episode out. But it probably would not be a full regular episode, because, well, there is a lot of stuff I shaved off from this episode, and I'm just going to make it a bonus one on Monday, as well as a little bit of extra information that I'm also going to make known to you on Monday about how I'm going to address certain things or recording episodes moving forward. And yeah, that's been pretty much it. So yeah, see you in the next episode. Until then, keep moving forward.